I've had to listen to Don tell that Idaho joke twice now. I had to laugh both times. I'm John Allred, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad to be here. They asked us to do this workshop, and they didn't tell us what to do it on. Last night we were talking, I thought, well, I'll do it on sex. It's a third of our inventory, you know, and we never talk about it. And then I saw in the program that they had it set aside from 10:15 to 11:45. And I thought, well, I don't know that much about sex. So I thought maybe we should... One of my favorite workshops is our adventures before and after. And I thought, well, if I combine those two together and do our adventures in sex before and after, I still can take up an hour and a half doing that. But I think we'll talk a little bit probably about sex today, because I think it's I'm just the guy to talk about that. I really am. Before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to have a real distorted view on sex, and since being in AA and getting God in my life, becoming spiritual, I've really come to see that sex is really a beautiful, sacred, holy experience, really, something that should be enjoyed and shared by the three people involved. Kind of let you know where I am on that deal. The reason I want to talk about it, I love to do this when I'm doing the steps in my step study, because usually we talk about sex and it's, you know, we go through the book, we talk about the salt and pepper deal and all that stuff, and we don't criticize anybody's ideals on sex, and I certainly am the last guy to do that. However, I do think it's important, because without getting that deal fixed in me, there's no way you can have a successful relationship. It's just impossible to have a successful relationship unless I got my sex deal fixed. And I used to have a terrible time with sex. I mean, I was reading in the newspaper years ago when I first got sober. I saw they'd done a survey, and they said that the normal American male. Now let me tell you what normal means. Normal is what the average person does in any given environment. So the average American male has it had 12 different sex partners in his life. And it said that the normal, healthy American female had 9 sex partners in her life. And I read that, and I started laughing. I thought, man, if that's normal, I feel bad for some of those folks out there. They ain't getting any, you know? We alcoholics raise that average up a whole lot, you know? And I just didn't know how to get that thing fixed. And I did my inventory on it, went through my inventory, and I was having lunch. I had a friend named Kevin. And Kevin, he's passed away now. He passed 11 years sober. And he was constantly doing inventories, constantly writing inventories, because he had a terrible time with relationships. And I was having lunch with him. We were about 4 years sober then, 5 years sober, about 4 years sober. And he was right. He said, I got to go. It was Friday. He said, I got to finish this up. Got to get out of here. I'm meeting with my sponsor tonight to do another inventory. And I said, you're doing another inventory? He said, yeah. I said, what on? He said, relationships. And I said, you're doing another inventory on relationships? He said, yep. And I said, well, what's your problem with relationships? He said, well, I'm just peeling the onion, you know, getting a little more idea why I'm having trouble with relationships. I did this other inventory. I'm meeting with my sponsor tonight. And I said, well, let me save you that. You know why you're having trouble with relationships? He said, why? And I said, because you're a selfish, self-centered son of a bitch. That's why you're having problems with it. That's the root of our problem, selfish self-centeredness. And you can write inventories about that all you want, and you'll find out you're a selfish, self-centered person. I was sitting in a meeting, and the gal was doing an inventory on finance. And she was trying to figure out why she's having trouble with her finances. So she's doing an inventory on finance. I'm like, well, you know why you're having problems with finances? Because you're a selfish, self-centered son of a bitch. That's why you're having a problem with the finance. You like to spend more than you make, you know? Every problem I got goes back to my selfish, self-centeredness. And I was having a terrible time with relationships and writing about it. See, we learned how not to do something. If you're having problems with relationships, you're going to have to get your sex deal fixed before you can ever hope to have a successful relationship. And I was having a terrible time with relationships and with sex and that whole deal. And so... like everything happens, you know, my sponsor says, well, you got to quit dating. See, we learn how not to do something in the very first step. We learn how to fix things in the very first step. See, how did I learn how to quit drinking? I'm going to learn how to have a successful relationship the same way. And what I had to do is I had to quit having relationships. I didn't have any relationships for a long time. And it was interesting what happened. It happened the same way I learned how to get my sex deal fixed. What I did is I quit dating for a long time. Didn't date anybody. And see, that's what's going to have to happen. You're going to have to quit dating. I did. If you're going to get your sex deal fixed, and I had to quit dating because I couldn't say no. So I had to quit dating girls and learn how to be friends with John. And that went back to what I learned in the first step again, how I learned how not to do something. Because in that first step, I learned how not to drink. What did I do? Would it do you any good? Would you ever get sober if you kept drinking and wrote about it? No. You had to quit drinking, didn't you? You had to quit drinking, and then you had to pray and have God ask you to remove that compulsion from you and talk to your sponsor about it. And that's going to happen with every character defect I got. And I looked at my sex deal as being a character defect. I had to quit having sex. And the way I had to quit having sex was I had to quit dating, because I couldn't date without that expectation. You know, it was so enrooted in me. If I took a girl out, that's what I was going to do. You know, I was going to do my best to have sex with her. And so I had to quit dating. So I didn't date for a long time. And I found out that that's going to happen the same way as my drinking did. See, I learned how to not, I didn't date, didn't, had to quit having affairs. So I'm going to go over my sex deal the same way I go over my drinking deal. Which means I'm going to quit drinking, talk to my sponsor about it, go to meetings, and pray to have God change me. So if I'm going to have sex, if I'm going to cure my sex problem, I'm going to do it the same way. I'm going to quit having affairs. Wouldn't you rather write about it? Be much easier to write about it, you know. Keep having them and keep writing about it. It doesn't do you any good, but you feel like you're doing something, you know. You feel like you're writing about it, doing another inventory, writing about it, peeling more of the onion away, and you continue to get sicker and sicker and sicker. You ever notice how people are always writing about relationships, are always screwed up in them? You know, we want to get well, but we don't want to quit doing it. So we got to quit doing it. We got to quit having affairs one day at a time. We got to pray, ask God to change us, and then we have to talk to our sponsor about it. And so I quit having affairs, and I didn't have any. I quit dating. And as I said, I guess if I could have dated and not had sex with a girl, I could have continued to date. But I couldn't do that. You know, I'm a weak guy, so I just quit dating. It's not worth it. I just quit dating. And I quit dating for a while, and I was at this party. I learned how to be friends with John. It was very, very tough to be alone. So I started being alone, and then I started hanging out with guys where sex wasn't the problem. You know, I could learn to be friends with men because I never had any real friends about the deal. I had guys that I ran around with, but I didn't have any real friends. And I never had any girlfriends that were just friends, you know. Never did. I had a lot of girls I talked to, but they weren't any real friends. And so I had to learn to be friends with myself, then learn how to be friends with men, and then I could be friends with girls a long time later, not before then. And so I was hanging out with guys, and a friend of mine invited me to this Christmas party. And I'm at this Christmas party, and he was not an alcoholic. He was just a guy. So we're at this Christmas party, and we're having fun. I went out to smoke, and this is going back 20 years. And even then, smokers were starting to get frowned on. And so I went out to smoke, and there were a few of us that smoked. And I met this gal out smoking on the deck, and we got smoking and joking and talking. And her name was Nancy, and I got her phone number and went home. And the next day, I called my sponsor and said, I met this gal. I think I want to go on this date. And he said, you want to go on a date? And I said, yeah, I think I'm ready to go on this date. And he said, okay, you can do that on one condition. I said, what's that? He said, you're totally honest. And I said, oh, I can do that. And he said, I don't think you can, but we'll see how it goes. So I said, now how do I go about going on this date? And he said, well, you call her up and you ask her out on this date. I said, I don't do it that way. He said, what do you mean you don't do it that way? She said, well, I don't do it that way. He said, what if she says no? Then you're embarrassed. All that stuff. What I like is I like to come to the meeting, right? And I spot her. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's Friday at XYZ Group. She's here. She's probably going to be here next Friday. I'm going to go back to that group next Friday, see? And, you know, we always sit in the same area, right? We're very territorial. So she'll sit over here, and I'll sit back here. And then every week I start to move a little closer down the way here. Till I finally, about a month later into the deal, I get over here where she is. And then I find out where we're going to go to coffee after the meeting, right? So then I find a fine. So we go, I'll go to coffee. There's a big, long table, 10 of us there. She just sits here. I sit over here. And then every week I start to move a little closer down the road till I finally get across from her. And then I talk to her and I finally ask her out, you know. That's how I do it. And he says, no. He says, you're not going to quit planning that. He just called her up and asked her out. So I called her up. She said, yeah. So we got on this date. She's not an alcoholic. She's not an Al-Anon, nothing. She's just a normal person. So we got on this date. We did everything the first night. We went to dinner, and we went to a movie, and we went dancing all the first night. Had nothing to do the second date. We did all the first date. Dropped her off, 2 o'clock in the morning. Went home. Didn't have to ask her in for coffee. Can I come in for coffee? You ever notice the people? Only people that drink coffee at 2 in the morning are alcoholics? You know, the normal person, you drop them off at 2 o'clock, say, can I come in for coffee? It's 2 o'clock. What do you mean, come in for coffee? We're the ones that do that. And dropped off 2 o'clock, went home. I was so excited, 2:30, I called my sponsor, 2:30 in the morning. I said, I'm home. He said, are you alone? I said, yeah. He's the only time I want you to call me at 2:30 in the morning is when you're not alone. Okay. So we dated. And I learned a lot by dating her. I learned a lot. I learned an awful lot. I learned how to date. You know, I learned how to keep my mouth shut. I learned how to be honest. I've never been honest with a woman before. And that came out of sheer collapse, sheer desperation. It was one of those deals where I asked her out. My sponsor told me this. He said, now, if you're going to ask her out, if you're going to take her out Saturday, you have to ask her by Tuesday, or you can't ask her. You have to show the respect to ask her by Tuesday. You don't call her up Friday night or Saturday morning and say you want to go out tonight. You ask her by Tuesday. And by the way, girls, if he waits till the last minute to ask you out, wouldn't go. He's been shopping. He's been out there shopping all week for a better deal. Can't find the deal, so you win. You're default. You win by default. And guys, same thing, man. I used to ask these girls out on Tuesday to go out Saturday. And when they give you that line, well, you know, I live one day at a time. I never planned that far ahead. Call me Saturday morning or Friday night. We'll see how. Don't go. Don't do it, guys. She's shopping. That's all she's doing. She's shopping, waiting for a better deal. Because I want to tell you what will happen. You'll call her Saturday morning or Friday night, ask to say, do you want to go out tomorrow night? She's going to have plans. Oh, I'm sorry. I have plans. What do you mean? You didn't plan. You don't plan ahead. What do you mean? Well, I just made them. 5 minutes ago, just before you called. Sorry. She got a better deal. So I used to have to. I find it amazing about us, you know. We want to fall in love, just get all emotionally entwined in this relationship that we can't make a 5-day commitment to. We're crazy, you know. So I had to ask her out by Tuesday. So I asked her out Tuesday for Saturday. Saturday's date night. We're going to go out Saturday, ask her out for Tuesday. And it was one of those where I get paid on the 1st and the 15th back then. I was about 2.5 years sober, 2 years sober. Payday was the 1st and the 15th. And it was one of those times when payday fell on the weekend, right? It fell on like Sunday. Well, usually what happens when they pay me on Friday, okay? Well, I worked for this company out of New York, and I went in to get my check Friday, and they said, well, the checks didn't come in today. I guess it'll be Monday. I said, no. I got a date tonight. Want my check? Got to have my check. Got $7 in my pocket. Got a date tomorrow night. I need my check. She said, no, if you look in the employee manual, it says that we usually get them in on Friday, and we distribute them when we get them. But we don't have to till Monday. And we're not going to get them in now, so apparently they'll be in Monday. We'll distribute them Monday. I said, no, I need it today. Now, they're a $22 billion company, but they need to change for me. Want my check today. Got a date. Well, I'm so frustrated they won't give me my check. I got to go home. So I leave the office, go home. First thing I do when I got a problem is I seek isolation. Love it. I get me a carton of cigarettes, pack of Diet Coke, go home, lock the door, start smoking and drinking Diet Coke, figure it out. I got $7. I got a date tomorrow night. What am I going to do? My God, Nancy's expecting me to take her out. I don't have any money. And then I have an intuitive thought about 5 o'clock. Dawns on me. There's a grocery store right next to her, Tom Thumb grocery store. I can write a check for $100 in there. If I do that tomorrow night, it'll be at least Monday before it gets there. I get paid Monday. I take my money down, put it in the bank. I'm okay. Now I got it solved. I'm feeling so good I can go to a meeting. So I leave there. I go to my home group, Dallas North. I'm feeling good. We get up Dallas North. It's speaker night. There's a guy speaking there. My sponsor's at that meeting. He should not be there. That is not his home group. After the meeting, I'm leaving. I don't want to be around him. He grabs me and says, what are you doing? I said, nothing. He said, what are you thinking about doing? I said, I learned a little problem. I got it figured out. No big deal. He said, what? I said, well, I got a date with Nancy tomorrow night. If I was going to get paid today, I was supposed to get paid today. They're supposed to pay me. They did not pay me. I only got $7 in my pocket. And I got a date with him. He said, what are you going to do? I said, don't worry about it. I got to figure it out. He said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to go to Tom Thumb, and I'm going to write that check. It's right next to her place. I'm going to write it tomorrow night. I'll write a check for $100. And then when my check comes in, he said, wait a minute. You can't go. I said, what do you mean I can't go? He said, you can't go on that date. I said, why not? He said, remember our agreement? You could date her as long as you're honest. I said, yeah. He said, you can't go. You're not being honest. I said, what do you mean I'm not being honest? He said, well, you are going to Tom Thumb, and you're writing that check, which means you're telling Tom Thumb you have $100 to make. You don't. You're lying to Tom Thumb, so you're actually embezzling money. You're taking stolen funds out of Tom Thumb, and you're taking them out there, and you're spending these stolen funds on this woman. You're an embezzler and a thief, and she deserves better than that. Jesus. So what do I do? And he says, well, you call her up and tell her you can't go. I said, what happens when she says, why? He says, well, then you tell her you just can't afford to take her out. You're sorry. Worst call I ever made in my life. I go home, pick up the phone. I call Nancy on the phone. I said, Nancy, I said about our date tomorrow night. I can't go. She's, oh, okay. See, she didn't need to know why. She's not an alcoholic. So I asked her, I said, well, don't you want to know why? And she said, well, if you want to tell me. And I said, well, I was going to get paid today. I thought I'd get paid today. I didn't get paid today. I don't get paid till Monday. I only got $7 in my pocket, and I can't take you out. I can't afford it. You satisfied? She said, well, she said, are you telling me you only got $7, you can't afford to go till Monday? I said, right, that's right. Hope you're happy. She said, well, she said, you know, I've been thinking, that's the only problem. I've been thinking about cooking anyway. She says, why don't I cook? We'll do a Blockbuster date. You take your $7 to Blockbuster, rent a movie, come over here, and we'll just spend time over here. I'll cook, and we'll watch a movie over here. I couldn't believe that. That's not the way I do it. See, that's not my problem. See, I'm the knight on the white horse. Okay? I'm going to ride into her life. This little damsel, I'm just going to scoop her up. Put her on the horse. You got problems? I don't got problems. You want money? Babe, we can get money. How much money do you want? We can get money. This ain't a problem for us. That ex-husband giving you a problem? Let me know, babe. We got people that can handle that. See? I like to paint this picture of what I think the girl wants. And by the way, you got three kinds of women in AA, really. You got the damsels in distress. They're the ones, that I like to ride in, scoop them up, fix them. And then you got the Florence Nightingales. Okay, they're the ones that want to take care of me. Okay, a lot of those in the Al-Anon program. So you got the damsels in distress. You got the Florence Nightingales that are going to, I'm going to take care of the damsels. Nightingale's going to take care of me. And I'm kind of, I guess I'm bisexual in that way. I can go either way. It doesn't really matter. Okay? I just need to know what you are. Okay? Do you want to take care of me or do you want me to take care of you? It doesn't matter to me. I just know what you want. Okay? I can go either way. Just tell me, you want me to take care of you? Fine. No problem. I can do that. Or you can take care of me. I don't care. Really don't care. And then you got the healthy ones, right? But you don't need to worry about them. You'll never find them. You won't. Your picker broke, ain't getting fixed. Just ain't getting fixed. Looking for one of them in AA is like looking for a parking spot. You know, all the good ones taken, and those that aren't taken are marked handicap. So you just won't find them. So I'm sitting there, and so I'm going to scoop her up, put her on my horse, and I'm going to take care of her. See? I ain't got problems. I like to paint this picture of what I think they want. They're either going to take care of me or I'm going to take care of it. It doesn't matter to me. Just need to know that. And everything's built on a lie. Everything is built on a lie. And it takes them usually about 6 weeks to figure out, well, wait a minute. This picture of John doesn't really match the reality of John. And so my relationships lasted about 6 weeks before they were wise enough to because the whole thing was a lie. You know, I never could sit down and tell the gal, listen, I can't afford to go do that. You know, or I don't want to go do that. You know, I've done a lot of things I didn't want to do. You know, and I love that part. People, I love us because we sit and say, well, I'm working on setting boundaries. We used to call that people pleaser. I'm just a people pleaser, you know. I tell you, you want to learn how to set boundaries, you don't got to do a lot of writing. You don't got to figure a lot of stuff out. You just need to keep all your yeses. You just work on keeping all your, when you say yes, you do. And we don't know how to say yes. We don't know how to say no. We know how to say yes. But our yes usually is put out there to end the conversation. Don't you love it? After the meeting, you're talking about where you're going to go to coffee after the meeting. There's eight of you talking. Where are we going to go? Where are we going to go? Finally, somebody says, let's go over here. Say, okay, fine, we'll go over there. And then half of us don't show up. You know, everybody agrees to go over there, and then half don't show up because we all take separate cars, and half of us don't go. I had no intent. I just said yes to end the conversation. I was tired of talking about it. You know? So I said yes, and then I'd never planned on going to begin with. You know? A lot of times you'll accept a date, never intending to go. And then the day before, call up and say, oh, you know, I got a problem, this or that. I love the sponsor excuse. My sponsor won't let me go. You know? Or stand them up, one of the two. Just stand them up. But I love to, you know, we never keep our yeses. I would say yes to people. They would say, listen, can you give me a ride? I'm in Dallas. Can you give me a ride to Fort Worth tomorrow at 2 o'clock? I say, yeah, I'll give you a ride over there. Somebody else, an hour later, says, listen, I need to go up to Louisville, opposite direction. I need to be there by 2:30. Can you give me a ride? Oh, yeah, I can take you there. You know, impossible to do. I'd agree. And then get mad at them for putting me in that position. What the hell they asked me to do all that shit for, you know? Crazy. So you want to learn to say no? Just keep all your yeses. Go on a lot of dates you don't want to go on. But if you said yes, you got to go, you know? And so I learned how to be honest with Nancy just by finding out that, hey, I'm not in my pocketbook. It's okay. Let's find out if you really like who John already is right now instead of having that 6 week of emotion involved and that all that stuff involved. Let's find out right now. You know, if you really like John Allred. So let me be honest with you. In doing that, I also learned how to keep my mouth shut. You know, keep your mouth shut. See, I have the problem. I like to make statements that have long-term ramifications based on a short-term emotion. Gets me in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. So I learned how not to tell her I love her. I love that third date conversation you have. Mine always happened on the third date. I don't know how yours went. Mine was usually on the third date, that third date conversation. When you're out there on a date, my conversations went kind of like this. Well, you know, honey, things are progressing much faster than ever in my whole life before. You know, I really wasn't looking for a relationship when we got together. I guess it's a God deal. And you start to define that relationship, whatever that, you know, what are we doing here? You start to define what it is that you're doing. Whatever you do in that third date conversation, you blew it. You blew it. I don't know how to fix that third date conversation. It's over. You might as well just say, well, we screwed up. You know, can't fix it. We'll have down the road, see you later. Because no matter what you decide, when you define that relationship, it's wrong. I've got guys come and say, well, you know, I've been seeing Kathy. I said, well, I know you went out with her a couple times last week. Well, we had our third date. And we've decided to just be friends. You blew it. You just blew the whole deal. What happens if God wants you to be more than that? You can't. Because you decided to be friends. You know, I had other guys come to me and say, "Well, we've decided." I love this. This was a shocker to me. You know, Kathy and I have decided that we're just going to be sex buddies. That's not what they call it, but there's another name for it there. But that's basically what it is. We're going to be sex. I said, "What? You're going to be what?" So, well, we're just going to be sex. But, you know, we get a little anxious, a little anxiety going. Either one of us, we can just call and kind of have a little release, a little tension relief. I said, you guys agreed to that? I said, yeah. I said, whose idea was that? I want to find out. Amazing. You decide to do that? Oh, you blew it. You just blown it. Because what happens if God wants you to be friends? What happens if God wants you to be exclusive partners? So no matter what you decide is wrong. Because you've cut God right out of the picture. You know, we've made this step in the third step that we've turned our will and life over to the care of God. We cannot manage our own lives, but we're going to manage this relationship by having that conversation. What are we doing? Where are we going with this thing? We need to decide where we're going. No matter what you do, it's wrong. You need to keep your mouth shut and let God make of that relationship whatever God's going to have it be. You don't need to decide what it's going to be. God's going to decide what it's going to be. What you need to do is keep your damn mouth shut. Communication is not your problem. That's not your problem. Your problem is you're a liar. You know? And you're so good at lying, you don't even know you're lying. You think you're telling the truth. But it's a lie. You know? I'll never forget. I was dating this gal. We dated for a long time. And this was a real shock to me. She was a real therapy queen. She loved her therapist. Therapy was her deal. And she was in AA, but she was so cute. Oh, I loved her. And so we dated, and we argued all the time. I mean, we would just fight about, I don't know what we fought about. And this was new to me. I had never been in an argument with a girl I ever dated. And when it finally dawned on me, she'd been out in California on business for a couple weeks, and I picked her up, and I was taking her home. I hadn't seen her for 2 weeks. I didn't get home from the airport before we started arguing. And I dropped her off, and I went home, and I thought, this is nuts. We've been dating now for 6 months. I haven't seen her for 2 weeks, and I can't even get her from the airport to home without breaking out in a fight. And the next day, she called me up, and she said, listen, I've talked to Carol. Carol was her therapist. And she said, and Carol, if you'd be willing to, Carol would like to meet with us on our Help Us Learn to Communicate. And I said, well. I said, I tell you what, I would be happy to work on a problem as long as we identify the problem. She said, okay, that's what Carol's going to help us with, learn to communicate. And I said, well, communication is not our problem. We communicate very effectively. I understand what you're saying. And I think you understand what I'm saying. The problem is not our inability to communicate. The problem is our acceptance. I don't accept what you're saying. And you don't accept what I'm saying. That's the reason you argue with somebody. Because you don't accept what they're saying. So it's important that I change your mind to agree with my mind. So we argue about it. And neither one of us is going to change. And they told me a long time ago, when I was brand new in AA, that if there's one thing you can't accept about her, and you're going to expect her to change, walk away. Because she ain't going to change. And if you can't accept it, you might as well walk away now versus walk away in 6 months or in a year when it's going to tear you up. Acceptance is the problem, not our inability to communicate. I wanted her to change her opinion to match my opinion. Now, I don't know why that was important, but that's why I argued. And that's why she argued back, because she wanted my opinion to become her opinion. And then that's why we argue about it, you know? So you're going to have to keep your mouth shut and let God put that relationship together. Whatever God's going to want it to be. And if God wants it to be, you're not going to screw it up. You know? If God doesn't want it to be, you can't fix it. You can't make it happen. All you can do is delay what's going to happen down the road anyway. And then it's very painful. Because at some point in time, when I'm involved in those relationships that are just wacko and they're just going crazy, and I've been in as many as anybody in AA, God is going to say, somebody's going to say, thy will be done. It can either be you or it can be God. And I think at some point in time, God looks at us down here, and we're fighting to keep that deal together. We're fighting to do this. We're fighting for that job, whatever it is. Finally, God says, okay, thy will be done. Go do it. And when that happens, pain. You know, the forecast calls for pain when that, when John's will gets done, it's just a mess. And then I end up with all kinds of pain and things to take care of. And so I have to keep my mouth shut, and I have to listen to them and believe what they're saying. You know? I have to believe what they're saying. And I have to listen to them, my sponsor. You know, I love still Scorpion and the Turtle. We've all heard that story. They meet down there at the river. And the Scorpion says to the Turtle, we're crossing the river. Can I get on your back? The Turtle says, no. You can't get on my back. You're a Scorpion. You're going to sting me. The Scorpion says, don't be silly, man. We get out there in the river, and I sting you, and you die. He says, I'm dead, too. I'm in the middle of the river. I can't swim. I won't sting you. Well, that makes sense to the Turtle. Turtle says, climb on board. They get halfway across the river. Turtle's out there swimming. Scorpion's on his back. Scorpion reaches up, stings him right on top of the head. Turtle says, are you crazy? How can you do that? The Scorpion says, hey, you knew what I was when you picked me up, you know? And they tell you what they are. The problem is I don't believe them. I'll never forget, I'm dating this. First date, I'm with this girl. Not Nancy. This is after Nancy. Nancy and I, by the way, we just quit dating. We didn't break up. We just quit dating. There was no nuclear explosion, you know, big fight that went on. That's the way I like to break up, you know. I like to break up by picking a fight, storming out, you know, and then the next day when she calls or I call her, say, this just ain't working for me. I guess it's over, you know. We just kind of, we were honest with each other. We're still friends today. I 12-stepped her dad about 15 years ago. You know, we're still friends. I have nothing to have to run from her for. We still talk, you know. She sent me a nice little card when I got married. You know, we're friends, you know. But we just dated, and we were honest about it. And I was dating this other gal, Scorpion. I like to play with scorpions. Shiny. Little shiny, glistery, sparkly scorpions. Love them. Love those scorpions. We got on this first date. She says to me, I'm taking her home, dropping her off. She says to me, I have a confession to make. I said, really? She said, yeah. I said, what's that? She said, well, I stood a guy up to go out with you tonight. You know what my mind said to me? My mind says, hell, I don't blame you. And then 6 months later when she stands me up, I can't even be mad at her. She told me what she was. She told me she's a scorpion. She's going to sting me, and I love it. You know, my mind says, well, she wouldn't do that to me. Right? She wouldn't do that to me. Any ego in that? Ton of ego in that. And when she stings me, what can I say? Well, I call my sponsor up and say, can you believe that bitch stood me up? He said, I'm surprised it took this long. It's been a year and a half. I said, what are you talking about? He said, she told you what she does. She stands you up. She stands people up. You just don't believe that she wouldn't do it to you. And when she does it to you, you're all ticked off about it. He said, you can't be mad at her. She was honest. She told you she stood people up. You just don't believe her. See, people tell you what they are. They tell you exactly what they are. And yet I love to play the scorpions. Still do. Got lots of stings. Lots of stings. And because what happens is it's very subtle. That's why you need a sponsor. Because a sponsor can tell you how hot the water is. Yeah, see, you ever know how to cook frogs? If you take a frog and you put him, you get the water, if you're going to boil frogs, you get the water boiling, you drop the frog in this boiling water, the reflexes are so quick, they jump out of the water before they can cook. Jump out. And so you can't cook frogs that way. What you got to do is you got to take a big pot of cool water and you put the frog in the water. He likes it. It's cool. He's swimming around. You put him on the stove, turn up the water, turn up the heat a little bit. After a little bit of time, it's a little hot. The frog goes, a little hot. But it's not that bad. Swims around a little more. Turn the heat up a little more. It's getting hot. but it's not that bad. Turn up, pretty soon the water's boiling, frog cooked, too late, can't get out. You know? I want to tell you, if my alcoholism would have been as bad at the beginning as it was at the end, I'd have jumped out. But that's not what happens with alcoholism. It's progressive. It's like turning the heat up a little bit. Think, ah, it's a little hot. But it's not that bad. I remember thinking to myself, if I ever went to jail, that'd be it. You know, I'm done. If I ever get a DWI, I'm done. You know? After a while, by the time you get to jail, it ain't that bad. You know? It's not that bad. By the way, that's exactly why people stay in abusive relationships, both emotional, mental, and physical. Because it starts off very gradual. He pushed me. He just shoved me. He didn't hit me. He didn't mean to. It's not that bad. And pretty soon the guy's beating the hell out of you. And it ain't that bad. You know? It's just very slow progression with that. And relationships are the same way. You know? The learning to not talk about it. Talk to your sponsor about it. I used to go home and talk to my sponsor about Nancy and say, you know, I really like Nancy. She's a doll. She's got everything, you know, she's got a job. She works for Delta Airline. We can fly around for free. We can do this and that. And I'm making money and I got this job. And he said, that's fine. You know? And pretty soon, you know, what? It wasn't, we were friends. We were never going to be more than friends. Now we dated about, probably about 9 months, you know, before we just quit dating. And it wasn't a big breakup. It was just we just quit dating. And when I started dating other girls, and I dated the Scorpion, I got stung a little bit. Called my sponsor up, you know. And he used to always tell me about the water getting hot. By the way, this is the great need for sponsors, because I learned when I went through a deal where I got divorced, and it was very painful to me. And I'm working with my sponsor. I learned a lot. I learned that, see, you can't see the mountain you're climbing. If you're climbing a mountain, you can't see that mountain. You can see all the mountains around you, but you can't see the mountain that you're on. That's why sponsors are so important, because sponsors can see that mountain. And they sit there and say, well, there goes John. He's going toward that cliff again. He keeps falling off that cliff. I don't know when he's going to learn any better. Crash, I fall. He comes over, scrapes me up, puts me in the wheelbarrow, wheels me back. Says, well, I've tried to tell you, the cliff's there. You're going to fall off that cliff. But I can't see it. You know, I just cannot see it. And I rationalize everything. All those character defects, and that's all sex is a character defect, the selfish character defects that's wrapped up in self. And by inventorying it away, it ain't going to go away. That is not, you cannot inventory that stuff away. You're going to have to take action. And the action to take is not doing it. Even though you want to write about it and keep doing it, when you're ready to get well, then you quit doing it. And that's when you talk to your sponsor about it and have somebody else talk to you about it and pray to God to have God change you. And he does change you. And as you talk to your sponsor about it, see, he doesn't see the cliff you're climbing. He doesn't see the mountain you're on. And I learned how to, whenever I start to justify or rationalize something, why it's okay for me to do that, this is a key point. Whenever I justify my action, that action's wrong, no matter what it is. See, subconsciously, I will build a rationale why it's okay for me to go do that. I can do that, and I will tell you exactly. We say, why are you doing that? I can tell you why I'm doing it. Because if it's wrong, I've got all the justification in the world why it's okay for me to do that. If it's right, I don't even think about it. I don't build a defense. I don't build an argument. I say, I don't know. Is it something I shouldn't be doing? But if I got a good buddy of mine. His name's Dick. Dick's a great guy. Dick's about 68. And about 10 years ago, he was divorced. He got divorced. And I hadn't seen Dick for a while. And I ran into him at a meeting. And we're talking. And I said, how you doing? He's doing great. He said, John, I'm dating. I got a date. I got a girlfriend. This girl is so neat. You wouldn't believe it. She's beautiful. She's smart. She is, without a doubt, got the best, most mature program in Alcoholics Anonymous of any 20-year-old I've ever met in my life. And I said, I'll bet she does. He said, it's incredible. And you know what? John, if she's got, if you added the days up of her sobriety, she's got about 4.5 years sober. I said, what's her sobriety date? Well, she's got about 3 months right now, but she's been in since she was 15, but she's had about 4 or 5 slips, but she's only out for a couple months at a time. So if you added the total time sober up, she's been sober about 4.5 years. Wonderful, Dick. Let me know how that works out for you. You know? See, we can justify and rationalize anything, you know, if we want to do it. And you know what? My mind does that automatically. It doesn't even think about it. Why it's okay for me to date her. You know? Why it's okay for me to do whatever it is I'm doing that's wrong. So all those character defects that I've got, sex is one of them. And I focus on that today because that's what's going to start building relationships. Once I get that deal fixed, I can start to build relationships. And in order to fix that, I got to quit doing it. I got to quit having affairs one day at a time, talk to my sponsor about it, and be changed. And God will change me. And it'll happen just the way it is with alcohol, where that it's gone. I also don't ever put myself in the situation where it can happen. Key element. Do not put yourself in the situation where it can happen. When my wife was sponsoring girls, I'd never be alone with them. When they'd come over to the house, you know, to meet with her and she wasn't home in time, I'd invite them in, sit them in there, and I'd go in the bedroom. You know, watch TV in the bedroom. Don't ever put yourself in that situation where something bad can happen. You know, because why do that? Why do that? You know, my sponsor told me, we were talking about that, and he said, tell me the story about the guy sitting at his desk at work. And he went up, big tall office building works, and he goes to the drinking fountain, it's out in the hall, and he gets a drink of water, and he bumps into a gal out there, never met her before, she's getting a drink. And they get a drink, and they nod at each other, and he goes back to his cubicle, and he looks at the clock, and it's 3 o'clock. He makes a mental note of that. Next day at 3 o'clock, he says, oh my gosh, I'm a little thirsty again. He goes to the drinking fountain, and lo and behold, there she is at the drinking fountain getting a drink too. So they keep bumping into each other at the drinking fountain. They become friends. They trade names. Where are you working? Da-da-da-da-da. One day, he has to work a little late. Usually gets off at 5 o'clock. He gets off at 5:30. He's leaving. The elevator doors open up. He steps on. There she is. On the elevator. She gets off at 5:30. Well, they talk. They chat. They ride down the elevator together. They chat. They go on their way. Pretty soon, a couple, 3 times a week, the guy works a little late. Works till 5:30. They meet on the elevator. They're going down there. One day, it's rainy. It's raining. How's your day been? Oh, it's been terrible, man. It's just me too. It's been terrible. It's rainy. Now I got to fight this traffic. Don't want to fight this traffic. Tell you what. Let me buy you a drink. We'll have a drink. There's a little bar around the corner here. We'll have a drink. And we'll wait till the traffic dies down. Then we'll go home. Can I buy you a drink? Love a drink. Later that evening, they end up in the motel. Both of them married. Didn't want to do that. Had no intention of doing that. When it's all over, they're sitting there wondering, how on earth did this happen? Didn't want this to happen. I love my husband. Love my wife. How'd this happen? It happened at the drinking fountain. That's where it happened. You know? It's all set. We plan ahead. Set it up. Years. Not everybody does that. We love to do it. Set it up years ahead of time. Meeting at the drinking fountain. You know? So I don't go to the drinking fountain. You know? I really don't. I don't put myself in that position to go to the drinking fountain where I'm going to run into trouble. Because I know what I will do. You know? Don't want to do it? Not going to do it? Boy, it'll happen. So I just don't do that. You know? I don't set myself up for failure. Don't sponsor women. You say, well, we used to have a guy, and I'll just share this about that. I had a good friend of mine at Trinity Group in Dallas, older guy. And whenever we'd have in our topic of discussion in the group there on sponsorship, he would say, not a lot of people say that men should sponsor men and women sponsor women. That's not what my big book says. And he sponsored a lot of women. Sponsored a lot of them. And he was married, had a little wife. And one day, the little girl comes in. She's about 20-year-old girl, about 6 months sober. And she claimed everything under the sun that this guy had done to her, and boy, just tore the group up, split a group in half. Half of them believe her, half of them believe him. Now, I find it interesting. By the way, David, I'll just update you a little bit. He's passed away now, but at that time he had had 3 heart attacks. He was on such blood thinner he couldn't do anything about anything. You know, physically, it was impossible for him to rape anybody. It wasn't going to happen with all his blood thinner medication he was on. And I talked to David about what went on, and he said, John, I can't do anything about it, you know. But she wanted to do something, and I didn't want to do anything. She got so hurt, she stormed out of here, and was so embarrassed, she ran down to the club. Now, split the club down the middle. Half the club believed the girl, half the club... Why put yourself in that situation? I really don't know what went on. But you know what? If you hadn't sponsored anybody, if you hadn't sponsored her, why would you believe anything a 20-year-old, six-month sober alcoholic would tell you? You know? Very difficult. Very difficult to believe that. But don't know whether it happened or not. You know? Don't know whether I believe David or not. I know it'd be very hard for David to do it, but why put yourself in that boat? Why be alone with a 20-year-old, new, sober alcoholic? That's scary to me. Now, maybe if I was 80, you know, it'd be a different story. But I don't sponsor women for that very reason. That's when I made the decision. I do not sponsor women. I don't be alone with women. I'm not going to mess with that. You know, it just puts me in the water fountain, and I don't need to be there. You know, all those things are going to help me in my keeping my side of the street clean. I don't have to ever know. I don't care what my wife knows what I do during the day. I don't care. I don't care what my wife knows if what I did. I don't care if my mom knows what I did. I don't care if my sponsor knows what I did. What a freedom that is. When you don't care if anybody knows what you did all day today. Never was that way before. Ton of secrets. I don't want my sponsor to know what I've been doing. I don't want my wife know what I've been doing. I don't want my mom to know what I did today. You know, when you get to the point where you don't care who knows what you did, boy, I had a lot of freedom in that. That never happens to alcoholics unless you're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, practicing the principles. And so all those character defects, sex being one of them, but all the rest of them you can list in there, are going to be treated the same way. You have to quit doing them one day at a time. Pray to have God change you. And talk to your sponsor about it. I think what happens when you come into AA, you're on a pretty broad path. And you can run all over that path. Do anything you want. As long as you don't drink, you're okay. And then after a couple years go by, what happens is the road starts getting narrower on you. Now you're doing the same stuff you were doing when you first came in, but not drinking. But it's like you're off the path. You know, now you're stumbling over rocks and over weeds tripping over stones and all that stuff, and you got to give that stuff up, and that puts you back in the path. Now you can do everything you did when you were sober, but not drinking these two things, and you're okay. And then a few years go by, and the road gets a little narrow on you. And now you're doing the same stuff you're doing last year, but you're off the road, and you're stumbling over weeds and rocks, and it's rough walking. And you got to give that. See, I think the surrender is progressive. When I give up those character defects, I become willing to have God take them all. And what happens is, one at a time, as the road gets narrower on me, I give them up. You know? And today I don't even know what they are. I know that what happens is that last year I was doing things I can't do this year. There are things I'm doing right now I can't do anymore. I could do them last year. I was okay. See, I don't give anything up till it hurts. Because I don't even know what the character defects are anymore. I don't even know what they are until they start to bother me. You can look at me and you can say, Larry, you shouldn't be doing that. Larry says, why? I'm okay. Until it bothers you, why quit? How many times do people tell you shouldn't drink like that? Do you any good? Till it bothers you, you don't quit. And you say, you shouldn't be dating those newcomers. You shouldn't be doing that to that guy. You shouldn't be doing that to that girl. You shouldn't be lying like that. Till it bothers you. You know, at some point in time, that road's going to get narrower on that guy or that girl. And he's going to have to give it up. That's what we call progression, you know? Spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. We're going to be progressing through this thing the rest of our lives. So there's stuff I'm doing today that if I'm progressing, I won't be able to do next year. What is it? I don't know. I'm willing to know, but until I know, I don't know. Next year, I'll probably know. But I got to give that up. I can't do that anymore. You know, I can't do that. I got to quit doing that. It may be maybe stuff I'm eating, maybe stuff I'm smoking, maybe cigarettes. I love to smoke. You know, and I knew it was killing me. I knew it was wrong. I hated it. I would burn all those holes in my clothes and my pants, you know. And I think, Jesus, I got to quit this, you know. Never quit. About 10 years ago, I've been smoking for 15 years. I just quit. You know, got time for me to quit. And I quit. A lot of people talk about sugar, all that other stuff. I love junk, you know. It's getting now uncomfortable because my stomach can't handle all that junk. Maybe I'll quit. Don't know. You know, I'm praying about it now. We'll see what happens. But that surrender of all those defects gets... Actually, what happens is it's like an hourglass. Surrender's like an hourglass because the more I'm able to surrender, as the road gets narrower on me, the more I'm able to surrender and give to God, it really opens up. And the more freedom I have. Never was I in more bondage than when I was drinking, right? Gave up drinking? Did I lose any freedom? No. Opened up, got a lot more freedom by not drinking than I ever had drinking. All those defects, including the sex deal, are going to be the same way. The more I'm able to give up and let God have, the hourglass opens up, the more freedom I have to enjoy life as God intended it to be. You know? Because this whole life was created for our benefit. You know? Not to be in bondage, but to be free from bondage of self. And myself, for some reason... And I don't know why, doesn't really matter today, why I am so tied up in myself that it keeps me in bondage and I have to give more and more of that those defects up, which are the binds that are keeping me in bondage. And the more I'm able to give those up, the more freedom I'm able to have. And it's going to be progressive and it's going to go on and on. When do I have sex? You tell me, John, I shouldn't have any sex? You know? I don't know. I'm not going to put that. For me, when I was dating, my rule was this. If I've made the decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God, that means bedroom and all. So when I can invite God into the bedroom, then I guess it's okay for me to have sex. If I can't invite God into the bedroom, not okay. Does that put any time on it? Does that mean that on the sixth date we can go to bed? You know? Does that mean I never sleep on the first date? That's not what that says. That says when I can invite God into the bedroom, it's okay. Now to do that, what's going to have to happen? I'm going to have to be real honest. See, we focus a lot on sex in the program. A third of our inventory is sex inventory. Sex ain't the problem. We all do sex real well. You know? We really do. We practice a lot. Okay, so we got that deal down. It's usually the before and the after that give us the problem. Men usually, not all the time, but men usually have problems with the before, and women usually have problems with the after. The before is the lies I tell you to get you to have sex. And the after is the expectation, what that means now that we've had sex. I guess we're going together. I guess he loves me. He wouldn't have slept with me if he hadn't loved me. So it's the lies before and the expectations of after that create all the problems. And so I got to work on the lies before and my expectations after. And I have to also keep in mind that that is a very special act that should be reserved for my very special people. And when I can invite God into it, then it's okay. If I can't, it's not okay. But my responsibility is to be 100% honest that I'm not going to lie to her. I'm not going to tell her that I'm more than what I am. I'm not going to paint this picture of what I'm trying to, of what I think she wants to see. And I'm not going to expect anything after her when it's over. And as I said, usually the men have problems with it before, the lies and the deceit, telling them whatever they need to tell them to get what they want. And the women usually have problems with the expectation of when it's after. You know? So what I have found in my time, I'm married now. I have a great wife. We met at a pool party. She was not in AA. We've been together 15 years. And she's in Al-Anon now. I tried everything. Well, I was 10 years sober when we met. And she had never dated an alcoholic. And which I found real interesting that she'd be attracted to me. You know, why are you attracted to me? But, she's a beautiful gal. I mean, I got such a good deal on that. And married way above myself. And I wish she could have been here. A lot of you have met her. She's been out to the tri-state and stuff. And we now have custody of our grandbaby, which is a whole new experience. Because her daughter is a methamphetamine addict. And she has a couple months clean. I don't know. Her skin looks like she probably does, because, you know, meth freaks have all those scabs and stuff on them. And her skin shows that she's probably pretty straight. Tied into a guy that is every father's worst nightmare. You know, he's 12 years older than she is. Never had a job, no money, no car, no place to live. And the only way he makes money, I guess, is by selling dope. He's been to jail a couple times this year. And it's just a mess. And so we have custody. My wife is taking care of the baby, so she doesn't get to travel with me as much anymore as she used to. But I tell you what, that's been a real blessing in my life. And I had to go through what I went through and learning how to keep my mouth shut. And it used to bother her that she would say, "What are we doing here?" And I said, "I don't know." "Well, can we talk about it?" I said, "No, I don't want to talk about it." She said, "Why can't we talk about it?" I said, "Because it doesn't make any sense for us to talk about it." You know, and so we just dated, and the deal fell together. We dated for 7 years before we got married. We've been married for 8 years now, and I don't have to tell her. When I was dating, I didn't have to call her up and tell her that I'm only going to date you exclusively. You know, I found out what Chuck Chamberlain said is true. You know, that what she does when I'm not around is none of my business. It's my business what I'm doing when she's not around. How am I behaving? What am I doing? Not what is she doing, but what am I doing when she's not around? She lived in Waxahachie, Texas, about 30 miles away from Dallas. And what am I business? What she was? We saw each other twice a week. You know, we talked on the phone regularly. I mean, like every day. But for probably 3 years, I would see her about Wednesday for dinner, and on Saturday night we went out. And we talked a lot in between then. We dated, and I quit dating everybody. I used to date. I had Waxahachie Patsy and Seattle Betsy. And Seattle lived in Seattle, and Waxahachie lived in Waxahachie. And I quit dating Seattle. Didn't have to tell Patsy I quit dating Seattle. You know, I just quit dating her. She didn't tell me when she quit dating other people. You know. None of my business who she's dating. It's my business what I'm doing. So I can decide that I'm just going to work on this deal and quit dating other people. I don't have to have her, the mutual consent. That's not the deal. The deal is me being okay with me and me doing what's right for me and me doing what's right when she ain't around, not what she's doing. She's going to be fine doing whatever she's doing. And it's amazing how they shape up and do the right thing. You know, when you let them do that, isn't that right? You know? Learned a lot of that stuff from the Al-Anon program. And so we dated for 7 years. Never did. You know, get to the point where I was telling her, "I'm not going to date anybody else. Let's have it exclusive." Never did that. Finally gave her a ring, got engaged. You know, and I did that after 7 years. And I figured I'd have another seven. I said, well, once I give her a ring, then we got 7 more years before we get married. But that didn't work that way. As soon as you give them a ring, man, they start setting dates, you know? And like 9 months later, we were married. I thought, how'd that happen, you know? And it's been a great thing for me. It's been a wonderful thing. it was a little difficult with her daughter because of the abuse. And I don't know how that's working out, you know. But I do know this, that if that she'd have been up a crick, because she was totally unprepared for her daughter being a drug addict without me in there. Because I kept telling her, she's got a problem, she's doing drugs. No, she's not. I asked her, she's not. I said, and she's lying. No, not my daughter. And so it's been a, she said, you came into my life because God knew that she was going to go on drugs. And you were going to help us with that. I don't know, maybe so. But it's been an incredible thing. And with that, I could ramble on a lot about the relationship I have with my wife. But that's all possible because I went through the process of eliminating the problems I was having with sex and all the other character defects that I have that come over into relationships with people. Because that's what this deal is all about. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program that's going to enable us to put our family lives back together and work with other people in and out of the program, so that we can have relationships with employers, relationships with spouses, relationships with children, and relationships with fellow employees and fellow people we work with. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous totally is about. And you can't do that when you got all these things tagging at you and pulling you away and all those secrets that are being kept because you got these character defects. So with that, I'm going to end. And I still didn't talk about it for 45 minutes, but I'm done. Does anyone have any questions? I guess we can open to questions for a few minutes. Okay, I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you.